Hey everybody, good evening. I'd like to start on time, Mitzvah Shem, end on time. For those that need to daven Marv, you Mitzvah Shem, you'll be able to daven at the 9:30 Marv. So I thank all of you for coming. The shir is being given, Leili Nishmas, my mother, Imi Barasi, Olea Shalom, Chana Basmei Ravram, and Shamash Avin Aliyah from our learning. I think it's a very appropriate subject, an introduction to the 3 weeks, a preparation for the 3 weeks dealing with response or tshuvas from the Shoah that unfortunately is a very, very ever-present reminder for us about the Churban Beis HaMikdash. It's, as if you wish, a continuation of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And until Mashiach Tzidkenu comes, Meher B'Yameinu, so we know that the 3 weeks is a period in our calendar that is a, unfortunately, tragic time in our calendar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into the calendar that this is a potential for Rachmana Litzlan Tzoros, Lo Aleinu. And we know this is all based upon the Meraglim. When the Meraglim came back, it was Shavasa B'Tamuz, and the Meraglim, Tisha B'Av, and the Meraglim, starting with Shavasa B'Tamuz, the Tzoros, the five other things happened, but Meraglim came back on Tisha B'Av. And they said, Nebuch, the Diba Ra, they spoke the tragic, wrong, incorrect, improper things about Eretz Yisrael. And the famous words that always resonate in my mind, unfortunately, Atem Bechisem Bechia Shalchinam, you cried for naught. And how many of us were raised, at least some of us probably were raised with the idea, I'll give you something to cry about. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nebuch has given us something to cry about, and he put into the Bria, he put into this time of the year, that unfortunately, this is a time of potential. I hope it's only potential tzaris for Klai Yisrael. We know that many terrible, tragic things have happened on this day that are recorded in the Mishnah, as well as that have been recorded throughout Jewish history. And Be'ezus Hashem, in preparing for the 3 weeks, in the hope that we learn from our past communal mistakes and Klai Yisrael mistakes, that this year we can fulfill that the day of Tisha B'Av is called a Moed. It's called a holiday. So that's unfortunately not yet in our history that the day of Tisha B'Av is a Moed, but Be'ezrus Hashem, this year we truly will celebrate Tisha B'Av and not commemorate Tisha B'Av, but we'll celebrate Tisha B'Av as being a great Yontif with Mashiach Tzidkenu. That's not the end of the shir. So I speak very briefly just to say that why am I learning this shir, Leili Nishmas, my mother. So my mother was, of course, a Holocaust survivor. She was an Auschwitz graduate, and unfortunately her entire family was wiped out in one day, literally well over 60 people in her immediate family, her parents, brothers and sisters, and Nebuch, extended aunts and uncles and their children, all wiped out in a single day. And she and one sister managed to survive, and that sister, Nebuch, she buried right after the war, in the Chevra Kaddish of Bergen-Belsen. And my mother had the great zuchus. She always said she had the great zuchus to bury her sister. She says, at least one of my mishpacha has a grave. And this shir should be a very fitting ili for her holy, holy neshama. And I would certainly not be giving this shir if it wasn't for her and my father, Olav HaShalom. Both of them made me who I am, and I have tremendous hakaras hatov to them. And that's why I always try to give shiurim li'ili nishmasim. And this subject of Holocaust related to the Churban, to me, is always a very earnest and very direct connection. When I grew up, and I don't mean to make this a political statement at all, it's not intended as such, I'm not taking any questions about this. When I was growing up, Yom HaShoah was not a big day, but Tisha B'Av was the big day. And I grew up in a community of survivors. My parents are survivors. And Yom HaShoah was never the day that it's become, which is Baruch Hashem. No comment, please. Nothing political. What I'm saying is that Tisha B'Av was the Yom HaShoah. That's when I grew up. Tisha B'Av was Yom HaShoah. The two were intimately connected. There was no difference between the Churban Beis HaMikdash from 2,000 years ago and the Churban Europa from a few years before. They were the same. The fear and the tragedy from the Churban of Europe was the same understanding of the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. And the two were intertwined, as they should be in Halacha. The day of Tisha B'Av is the communal day of of loss for the Jewish people. And we say ourselves, we say kinos for the holy Kedoshim who died during the Shoah. We say those kinos, two kinos that we say on Tisha B'Av itself. Again, it's not to say that we can't have a Yom HaShoah separate remembrance. Point that I'm trying to make is that Yom HaShoah and Tisha B'Av are intimately connected. And so much so that I want to read to you tonight from some of the great and holy responsa from Rav Ephraim Oshri Zatzal. He was a young Rav from Kovna. And he was in the Kovna ghetto. And he was all of 27 years old. He's a very young Rav. And he had placed upon his shoulders, because the Germans, Yimach Shemam Zichram, would especially like to wipe out the Rabbonim. They knew better than we understand sometimes the Chashivus of Gedolei Ador, Gedolei HaPoskim, and Gedolei HaRabbonim. And they understood that if you wipe those people out, if you debase those people, they Badafka would try to humiliate the Rabbonim. And they Badafka would try to go and eradicate the Rabbonim. They knew that the Jewish people would fall without the great Gedolei HaTorah. And there were very many Nebuch, Hashem Yimkom Domam Gedolim, that were killed. Rav Oshri Zatzal, he survived. And he was asked the most unbelievable tshuvos in the concentration camps, inside these horrific places. He was asked shilas that would absolutely boggle the mind to think that Jewish people in that situation are asking shilas. I remember once hearing a story, I forget already who the Gedolim involved in the story were, that's not the important part. The important part is the story, that there was an apikoris in the concentration camps who saw that there was a religious Jew who had a little sitter. He was able to hide the sitter. And he charged people a little morsel of bread in order to daven from his sitter. And this apikoris was so upset. He said, "This is your religion." He told this big rabbi, I forgot already who the rav was. He said, "This is your Jewish religion. A guy has a sitter and he doesn't share with other people. That's the greatness of the Jewish people. Ah, you're all horrible." In the concentration camps, this is what he said. And the rav said to him, put his arm around him, he said, "Instead of looking at the one Jew who, unfortunately, his hunger has overtaken his chesed, and he's selling his right to use the sitter for a morsel of bread, why don't you look at the hundreds of people that are lined up, willing to give that last morsel of bread to say a kapitel tillim, to daven from a sitter." So that's the greatness of the Jewish people. That's the greatness of the Torah. That's what we're supposed to prepare ourselves and learn for the 3 weeks, to understand that we are the Am HaNivchar. And despite all these tragedies that have happened to us, that doesn't change one iota that we are HaKadosh Baruch Hu's children. And that why he did things that he's done to us, I have no idea, nor are there answers, nor can we possibly understand the answers if we were to see them. But we have to remember that we are HaKadosh Baruch Hu's children. We are the Am HaNivchar. And if that means that we have to go through what we've gone through in the history to get to the point that we will eventually be zochet to Mashiach Tzikeinu, that's God's plan, and I have no shilas. And I know my mother had no shilas. She was a woman of pure emunah, and she believed wholeheartedly that her tafkid in life was to rebuild, and Baruch Hashem, she was zochet to rebuild almost all that was taken from her. So I want to read to you one Gemara. I'm not going to have a lot of text-based material tonight. I'm going to try to tell you outside some of the amazing and horrific questions that were asked to Rav Oshri. But I want to read to you a Gemara from the end of Cheskes Kabatim, Perek Shlishi in Bava Basra. So on Daf Samach Omid Beis, for those who wish to look it up afterwards. So the rabbi start off, I'm not going to read it inside the whole thing. And the rabbi said, Kishacharev Habayis, when the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there were many people that wanted to take upon ourselves all sorts of stringencies and not have any pleasure in the world. They wanted to say they shouldn't eat meat, they shouldn't have wine. And Rabbi Yeshua came along and said, that's not the right approach. You can't remove yourself from this world. Life has to go on. And he said, if you wanted to go and say we can't enjoy ourselves in anything in this world after a Holocaust, after a Churban Beis HaMikdash, and we should be totally separated, divorced from any pleasure in this world, he says, that's not right. On the other hand, we can't do nothing. So he said, we have to always remember. He says, you have to have a remembrance. So you go, Gemara goes through various types of remembrances that we have. A woman never puts on all of her jewelry. We never put out all the fancy silverware. When we build the house, we leave a part of the house empty. Doesn't say you can't build a house. Doesn't say you can't wear jewelry. Can't say, doesn't say you can't have nice flatware, nice china. But there has to be constantly a zikaron. There has to be constantly a remember. And I tell people this with a tremendous sadness. Every time I go to a shiva for a person who's a Holocaust survivor, our remembrance, our living remembrance is unfortunately, it's shrinking. The people who survived the Holocaust were not the young children most of the times. They, Nebuch, were all killed. And the people that were older, that managed to survive, their lifespan is gone. So you have a handful of people that were teenagers, maybe in their low 20s, that Baruch Hashem is still alive to be that zikaron for us. I know for anybody who's a child of a Holocaust survivor, you don't need a zikaron. You have that zikaron burned into your heart from seeing your parents. Hopefully, shlita, if not, zichronam livracha. But I feel sad for the people that didn't have those types of parents or didn't know those types of people, because that zikaron, that's priceless. And that's what Yeshua is telling us over here. You have to make a zikaron. You have to have a zikaron. And then he tells us the famous pasuk, Yimesh kochech Yerushalayim tishkach yemini, tidbak lashoni luchiki v'gomer. If a person doesn't remember Yerushalayim, if we don't remember the Churban, if we don't remember all the tzaddikim who Nebuch were taken away in the Holocaust, who were taken away in the Churban, Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni, all the other tragedies, so then there's no purpose in life. And we have reminders of this. At a chasidah, we all know we break the glass. That's one reason. People don't know as well. We put ofer, we put dirt, ashes on the head of the chosin, in the makom of tefillin. It's a constant reminder. We have to make for ourselves a zikaron. We can't for a second. We'll never forget. That's essentially a mitzvah saseh. Zachar lo tishkach. Amalek serves us in many forms. The Germans, Yamach Shemam Zichrom, are a form of Amalek. The Rav Zatzal said Amalek is not a genetic lineage. It's the way you act. The Germans fulfilled the Rav's description of Amalek, Nebuch, 1,000,000,000%. So we do reminders again. We put reminders on. And then we leave off with a positive idea. V'chol ha-mis'avela Yerushalayim. If somebody remembers, they take these zikarons and you feel bad. Person loses a mama, person loses a tata, so they don't need reminders. It's etched in them. But Yerushalayim, Churban Beis Hamikdash, is not maybe as etched in our hearts as well as it should be. Those of us that have the direct relationship with somebody from the Shoah, so we have that reminder, but we need much more than that. And certainly all of Klal Yisrael, if we don't remember Yerushalayim, v'chol ha-mis'avela Yerushalayim, but if you mourn for Yerushalayim, if we feel bad 2,000 years after the Churban, that there was a Churban, we're learning in the Marin Zvachim right now, all the unbelievable miracles and the korbanos and all the goings-on in the Beis HaMikdash, the outright miracles you could see every day, the unbelievable feats that were going on. If we didn't realize what we're missing to rekindle our emunah every second. You need to, you know, what are you going to do on a trip on Sunday? Oh, let's go to the zoo, let's go there. Let's go to the Beis HaMikdash and see a miracle. I mean, think of that. You need a boost of emunah. You need a reconnection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's go look at a living, real miracle right in front of our eyes. That's what we're missing from the Beis HaMikdash. Somebody who's misavel, call misavel Yerushalayim, zoche v'roa b'simchosa. We will be zoche. If you mourn Yerushalayim, you'll be zoche. And Yerutz Hashem, all of us should be zoche to see Yerushalayim rebuilt. Rav Oshri's wife, unfortunately now I have to say, zeche tzadekes livracha. She just passed away 2 weeks ago. She was herself a Holocaust survivor, an Auschwitz survivor. I think she's a little bit younger than Rav Ephraim Oshri Zatzal. She just passed away, literally 2 weeks ago. So we say the Shir Le'ilu Nishmasa as well. She wasn't his first wife. She was Rav Oshri's second wife. He had a wife and children that were never killed in the concentration camps. But he also rebuilt, like so many of the Gedolim, they rebuilt. I think he had 9 children, Kenayin Ahara. They're all musmachim and the wonderful women. They're all carrying on the traditions of their father. And why did he write this sefer? I want to read you his words. Why he wrote the sefer? First of all, how he wrote the sefer is amazing. He was asked these shilas in the concentration camp. He wrote down the questions. He wrote down his answers. He had no svarim. It's not like he could go Google it. And it's not like he could go to the concentration camp library and take out a ritva and see what the ritva had said. Oh, the Rashba says differently. All by memory. He's 27 years old. He's not a wizened old man who's 50 years of learning. He's 27 years old and he's given the most weighty shilas. And he buried them in little cans. And he said, should I ever get out? I'll dig them up. And Baruch Hashem, he did get out. One of the very few that did get out of the concentration camps. And he dug up his tshuvas and he then corroborated, did he paskin correctly by now having svarim to look at? And Baruch Hashem, he said he paskin correctly. And they took these tshuvas that he wrote, they made a 5-volume sefer out of them. 5 volumes of horrific shilas that are horrific in one way, but are unbelievably lofty in another way. And that he was able to go and see the greatness of the Jewish people, the greatness of the Torah, in the depths of hell. I want to tell you what he said. I'll read you just some of his words in Hebrew because it's powerful. So he says, talking about Nebuchadnezzar, all the people, he saw his shamash have his head bashed and killed right in front of him. And the shamash's last words, when you get out of here, tell them what they did to us. Tell the world what they did to us. Many, many such stories he states. And he writes, Heim kimu b'mitzius es divrei chazal. He said, the people in the concentration camps fulfilled the words, b'chol levavecha, b'chol nafshecha. They gave up everything for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything, including their lives. The unbelievable Mesiris Nefesh. People going into the concentration camps, to the crematoria, to the gas chambers, saying Shema, singing, learning. That's the godless that we have to remember, the zikaron that we have to take away. That they may take away our bodies, they may take away our guf, but they can never take away our neshama, they can never take away what makes us a yid. And he writes, despite the continuous horrors, afilu hatzoros haemshechti, he managed, he was zoche, he says, I was zoche, that's the language that he uses, laharbitz Torah bebati medrash. He learned, he conducted, he had a yeshiva in the concentration camp. And that, he's 27 years old, and he had a yeshiva in the concentration camps. And he says, They knocked down this place, they knocked down that place, and yet he still built in the concentration camps, despite the horrors, he built. And he's most proud of, he says, he had yeshiva for Bachurim, Tzirei Yisrael. And he taught them, and these are his words, just like Kishem Shemavarachim ala Tova, Kach Mavarachim ala Ra. Taught them what we learn in Gemara and Brachos, just like you have to make a bracha on good, you have to make a bracha on bad. It's called Baruch Dayan HaEmes. Person has to make horrible things happen to them, you thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I know there's stories about people that Nebuchadnezzar, a terrible tragedy happens to them. One famous story, I remember somebody lost somebody, so he couldn't say Baruch Adai no Emes at the time that he had to. 2 weeks later, he gathered a minion, he said Baruch Adai no Emes. They asked the Rebbe, why did you wait? He said, I didn't have the right Simchas HaChayim to make the Baruch Adai no Emes at that point in time. You have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I wasn't emotionally able to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, 2 weeks later, he had Yishuv Adas. I heard from Rav Shech the Shlit that they say that that's one of the reasons why an Onain is potter for mitzvos. Because he's called a Lav Bardas, the Rav said. He doesn't have the status of being mentally competent. You just lost somebody that's dear to you. You can't make a bracha because you're Lav Bardas. You don't have seichel at that point in time. You can't, you're not a mensch. Interesting idea. He writes, why did I write down my tshuvos? Rashamti osan lios lila mishmeris. This is my matseva. This is my tombstone. This is my remembrance. My mother, Leah Sholem, obviously said, the goyim loved to make museums about dead Jews. The Goyim loved to make museums about dead Jews. Hitler, Yamach Shemo v'Zichro. They had archives and archives. They had artifacts they saved. They wanted to have a museum for these Jews, like we go to the zoo. And you want to look at the different species, the animals. You're not eating them. You're not doing some of them. You want to just look. They wanted to create a museum of the dead Jews. He said, I'm going to create a museum of life, of Torah. And that's why he wanted to write down these tshuvas over here. And he said this was the chiyus that he had. These stories, these questions, that was the chiyus. And he said, that's our monument. I won't read it all to you in Hebrew, but he says, that's our monument. And he says, himself personally, Ulbisov, Olai Ligmo Todas Hashem. I have to give tremendous thanks to Hashem. Al Chasto Hagodo. On the great chesed that he did to me. I'm not sure most people would call what his life was at that point a great chesed. And he saw it as a great chesed. What a musa. That was my mother as well. She was amazed that she was alive. Everybody else she knew was dead. She's the only one that survived. And she never, ever forgot that. He said, I have to have a purpose. And he says, therefore, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu made me this Ud Mutzam Yesh. It's the famous line from the Haftar we just read 2 weeks ago in Baal Oscha, that Yoshua Kohen Gadol was described as this firebrand saved from the fire. Literally and figuratively, both for Yoshua Kohen Gadol, Rafai Moshri, Zatzal, and my mother, Zatzal. And he says, the purpose of this is Lahal L'Shmo HaGadol. God kept me alive to make a further Kiddush Hashem. That's true for every Holocaust survivor I've ever met. They all have unbelievable emunah in Hashem, the ones that stayed within the fold, and I, Chas V'Shalom, never have a question against anybody that lost their emunah. But the people that I know, they have unbelievable emunah. So let's look at some of his tshuvas that he wrote. I won't go through a great deal. One of my favorite ones, there was a Gaisha woman, Zecher Tzadekes Levracha, a righteous Gentile, as they're referred to in Yad Vashem and in other places, and including in Shemayim. And there was this one righteous Gentile who saved many, many Jewish people. She hid them in her basement, provided them with food and water, shelter, at great risk to herself. When the Germans found these righteous Gentiles, they did not treat them any better than they did the Jewish people. And they tortured them, and they killed them, and they killed their families. So it wasn't easy to be a righteous Gentile. My mother, Alei HaShalom, used to tell me when the Germans, Yimach Shemam Zichrom, came into town, the next door neighbor Goy said, there's where the Jews live. I couldn't wait to tell them where they lived and to take over their house, the hovel, I wouldn't call it a house. They couldn't wait to take it over. But there were a handful of righteous Gentiles. This woman was one. And she passed away in 1945. Right after they were liberated. And they went to Rav Oshri and asked him the following Shaila. Can we say Kaddish for this lady, for this Goyisha lady? Interesting question. I've been asked this similar type of a question in other ways. Can you make a Misha Berach for a non-Jewish person? Can you say a Kelmole type thing for a non-Jewish person? Happens sometimes where people are Gerim, so you say Kaddish, etc. Can they say a Kaddish for this lady? And Rav Oshri Paskin, 100% yes. She's a righteous Gentile. What better way? They wanted to do some sort of a memorialization of her tzidkus. And he said, absolutely. He says, and I quote the English over here as a translation. He wrote the Sefer in Hebrew, but it's been translated into English as well. He says, not only is it permissible to say Kaddish, it's a mitzvah to do so. That's a person who understood what it means to know who the Goyim are, both for good and bad. Listen to this story. This one, just again, if you haven't heard this story, it's an amazing story. You have to know a little bit of Minhag Yisrael. Most of the Hasidic communities, you don't eat gebrochst on Pesach. Yaharig vayavor. They don't dip their matzah in liquid, in water, in wine, in anything. It's gebrochst. You don't do that. Yaharig vayavor. Ashkenaz in Litvisha, no problem. The Vilna Gaon, he ate gebrochst. Many of the Litvisha Rashi Yeshiva, they ate gebrochst. It's not a din, that's for sure. amongst the Hasidic, it's an extremely important minhag. In the concentration camp, they were figuring out how we're going to get any flour to bake a matzah for Pesach. How are they going to do that? So this one guy came up with a plan. He would sneak out of the camp. They had a ways. It was a work camp. He would sneak out. He would barter. He would get. And every day he came back with a few little pieces of flour. They hid it. And it got a little bit bigger so they'd have enough to bake a matzah on Pesach. So they did this for weeks and weeks before Pesach. It was on peril of death if you came back and was smuggling anything. And he did it. He was willing to take the risk. A week or so before Pesach, he was caught. The Germans caught him, and they beat him to a pulp, literally and figuratively. They broke every tooth in his mouth. He had no jaw left. But he had his matzah. They had enough flour to bake a matzah or two. And they baked the matzah too. And listen to the shaila he asked Rav Oshri. He said, I'm a chassidish yid. I don't eat gebrokst. I don't eat matzah gebrokst. I can't eat. I have no teeth. I have no jaw. Can I soak the matzah in water and be able to swallow it down, soaked in water, even though I don't eat gebrokst? That's the question that this yid had. He didn't care. Every bone in his jaw was broken. He didn't care he had no teeth. He didn't care he was going to die. He wanted to know, yes, the shaila, can I break my minhag of gebrox in order to fulfill the mitzvah darais of eating matzah on Pesach? And Rav Oshri was matir neder for him. And he drank the matzah. He sipped the matzah, soaked in the water. So he had a kezayis. If he had the barest minimum of the matzah, he ate it gebrox. That's what a yid, who's a bal emuna, in the middle of the concentration camp with your jaw and every tooth broken, he's not worried about, am I going to need dentures? Am I going to need an implant? How am I going to look? Can I eat matzah that's shruya, that's soaked in water? Another amazing tshuva he was asked. 10-year-old kid in his yeshiva, one of the kids in his yeshiva in the concentration camp, came to him with a question. He said, I'm not going to live to be bar mitzvah. No, they didn't have any false expectations about life. I'm not going to live to be a bar mitzvah. They had tefillin. This was, again, a work camp type, a ghetto type thing. It wasn't a full concentration camp. He said, I'd like to start putting on tefillin. Now, normally, we don't let a young boy, 10-year-old boys, we don't let. Every other mitzvah, we let the 10-year-old boys start doing. Tefillin requires a sound mind and sound body in many different ways. And the Aruch HaShulchan says it best. He sums it up and he says, men shouldn't wear tefillin, but what can we do? We're mitzvah to wear tefillin. It's so dangerous to wear tefillin. So we don't let a bar mitzvah, a pre-bar mitzvah age boy put on tefillin. Some have the minhag only on the day of the bar mitzvah. Some we put it on, the common minhag is a month before, and you got to learn how to do it. But we don't let 12-year-old boys put on tefillin. We don't let 11-year-old boy put on tefillin. And that's why, halacha l'maaseh, we don't let women put on tefillin. It's too dangerous. The Aruch HaShulchan says, a man has to be crazy to wear tefillin. He would never wear tefillin except the women's silver too. So what can you do? That's why today we take our tefillin off right after davening. We don't leave it on all day like they used to because we have a difficult time keeping a sound body and a sound mind. It's halacha l'maaseh. The question is, 11 or 10-year-old boy, he asked him, can I please put on tefillin because I'm never going to be a bar mitzvah? That's what an 11 or 10-year-old boy was interested in the concentration camps. Not, am I going to get 8 toys on Hanukkah? Am I going to get an afikoman, a bicycle? Am I going to live to be 11 years old? And he knew he wouldn't. But he wanted to know, could he put on tefillin? And Rav Oshri Paskin, yes, you could put on tefillin. And he let him put on tefillin. And he said the look on that boy's face when he put on tefillin was ke'ein olam haba. That's what it means to be a yid in a concentration camp. That's what it means to be mis'avel on Yerushalayim. That's what it means to have a zikaron of who we are. Zochor al tishkach. pass the following story. It's a true story. The title of the question could be, are you allowed to do a tahara not right before the kavura? You all know, a person's 120, he or she dies, so we do a tahara right before the kavura. They didn't have the ability to call up the local Chevra Kadisha and arrange with the funeral parlor. At 9 o'clock, the email goes out, everybody gathered at Boulevard, there'll be a hesped, and then we're going to the cemetery, they announce the place, everybody get in line, the cars, the blinkers. They didn't have that ability to do that in the concentration camp. And they didn't always know when they'd be able to bury somebody. So this Shaila, the real Shaila, I'll give you the names of the people, because Zichron Baruch. So Rav Oshri was giving a lecture in the yeshiva that he set up. And the Jews, this was right before they went into the concentration camps. So it still was in the town. But the Nazis, Yimach Shimon v'Zichron, were already there. In the middle of the shiur that he's giving, one of his Talmidim, who was a man by the name of Rav Zalman Sher, Hashem Yimkom Domo. So as they're giving the shiur, his daughter-in-law comes in, Rav Zalman Sher's daughter-in-law comes into the shiur, wailing, saying that the Nazis, Yimach Shemam Zichram, just killed her three boys and her husband. Sitting in the shiur. Rav Zalman Sher falls off his chair and dies on the spot. Now, they weren't able to bury somebody right then and there. So they asked the Shaila to Rav Oshri, what should we do about a tahara for Rav Zalman Sher, Hashem Yimkom Domo? And he paskined, halacha l'maisa, do the tahara right here on the bench that he was learning on. And that's what they did. And whenever we get to bury him, we'll bury him. These are the shailas that Rav Oshri was asked. How do you do a tahara when you don't know you're going to do a kavura until who knows when? Another shaila. This one is, it's just an amazingly sad shaila. Brings down a very horrible situation. I'll give you the exact dates and the times because it's important that these dates and times be remembered. On Vav Mar Cheshvan in 5702, which is 1941, not that long ago, it was 2 days before something that was to be known as the Black Day of the Kovna Ghetto. The Black Day of the Kovna Ghetto saw 10,000 Jewish people slaughtered in the Kovna Ghetto, men, women, and children. So this is 2 days before that horrible, horrific destruction. You think about the World Trade Center, 3,000 people were killed. The Black Day in Kovno was three World Trade Centers. Horrible day. The leader of the Jewish community comes to Rav Oshri with the following shaila 2 days beforehand. They knew that the Germans were coming in to do this horrible Black Day. It was not going to be something that you would want to live through. And he is the leader of the Jewish community, the lay leader of the Jewish community. The way the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, worked was they weren't happy just to put a plane into the ghetto and blow it up. That wasn't their modus operandi. They needed to torture the people first. So the way that they would do it was they would bring the leader of the Jewish people into the town, into the public area, and butcher their children and wife in front of their eyes, and then kill them. And this Jewish leader said to Rav Oshri, I have a twofold shaila for you. I nebuch can't withstand that. I don't want to be watching my wife and children killed in front of my eyes. He asked him, am I allowed to commit suicide today? And the second part of the shaila, a twist, a chop, I'll be zochet to a Jewish burial. Whereas if they come in and they do a bloodbath, who knows if I'll be buried. So I'm going to die in 2 days. It was a vadai. And Nebuch, he was right. He wasn't making it up. It's a vadai, I'm going to be killed in 2 days. Can I commit suicide now so I'll have a Jewish kvura and I won't have to be watching my wife and children, Nebuch, Rachmana Litzlan, be killed in front of me? This is the shaila that Rav Oshri, 27, 28 by now, 29 by now, Rav Oshri was asked this shaila. And Rav Oshri said, we have absolutely no right to ever commit suicide. The AMA came out with a proclamation 3 days ago that they're going to revisit their stand on physician-assisted suicide. They should read this tshuva from Rav Oshri. His whole series of tshuvas is called Shelus to Tshuvus Mimamakim. Right? We say, Shira Malos Mimamakim Krosicha Hashem. From the depths, I call out to you. These are Shelus to Tshuvus Mimamakim, from the depths. And Rav Oshri said, you're absolutely not allowed to ever take your life. And he said, if the Nazis come and they kill you, let the Nazis come and kill you. But you don't take your life. A, that's what they want. You'll give them a victory. And B, we don't do that. That's not the Yiddish thing to do. And Nebuch, that's what happened. The guy was killed. His entire mishpacha was killed. And Rav Oshri said that in all the time in the Kovno ghetto, there were only three people that committed suicide. When you think about it, that's a phenomenal statement and testament to the Jewish people. That only three people in the midst of this horror took their own lives. And he said it's Keneged HaTorah, it's Keneged HaKodesh Baruch Hu. It's exactly what the Germans want you to do. They want to see you despondent. They want to see you give up hope, give up life. And he paskened absolutely not. Listen to another shaila he was asked. The Germans, Yimach Shalom V'Zichrom, took a pregnant lady who was in her ninth month and viciously, cruelly killed her in front of the people's eyes. Why? Because she was Jewish. The Germans left after they bayoneted her. And the people ran to Rav Oshri, who was right there, and said, can we do a cesarean section on this woman? Maybe the baby's still alive inside. And he paskened on the spot, absolutely yes. They did a cesarean section, post-mortem cesarean section on the baby, based on Rav Oshri saying, absolutely, it's not nivul hames, it's not desecrating the body, it's a small chance the baby will be alive. He says, absolutely. That happens to be the halacha l'maisa, not that, you know, there's any doubt that he was correct, but that's the halacha l'maisa. On Shabbos, you can do that. And they, in fact, did the cesarean section, and they found the live baby inside. It'd be great if that was the end of that story. The Nazis, Yimach Shemam Zichram, didn't know the lady's name that they bayoneted, so they came back to find out her name because they kept meticulous records. If you ever been to any of the museums that describe the Nazis, how they kept meticulous records in Berlin, they have a museum. They show you exactly. There were 12 people killed on these days, and they have their names. They listed so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so. Then the next day, the 13 people killed so-and-so. They have lists and lists. They have a medaktik. Kodesh Baruch Hu should medaktik with them, kichut asara as well. They're very punctilious. They were very known, the German strictness and the code. So the Germans came back to find out the name of the lady that they killed. They saw the baby was alive in Nebuch, Rachmana Litzlan. How can it be? They took the baby and smashed the baby on the ground and killed the baby. These are the shailas and the situations that Rav Oshri is talking about as a monument to the Jewish people. One more, and then we'll finish. The Nebuch, they had people that were, unfortunately, in very, very bad situations. And they asked, are you allowed to make the bracha, Shelo Asani Ovid? We say it every morning. Shelo Asani Goy, Shelo Asani Ovid. Can you make the bracha, God, I thank you very much for not making me a slave. They said, here we are, we're in the concentration camps. How can we make the bracha, Shelo Asani Ovid? Who is more of an Ovid than we are? And Rav Oshri said, and this is the message for the 3 weeks. We're not bound by who we are in life. By, this is my job, this is my profession. I'm a tailor, I'm an accountant, I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor, I'm a rabbi. That's not who we are. We don't say, well, I work very, very hard for this taskmaster. Well, I'm an oven. I'm in a concentration camp. The Goyim, the Germans, Yimach Shemam. V'zichram, they're torturing me, they're killing us, they're horrifying things. He said, that's not the Ovid. The only people we are to is in Eved Hashem. And this is the Nusuch the Chazal said for the Bracha, Shalo Asani Ovid. And we thank Hashem in the middle of a concentration camp that we're not the Nazis. And that we are not going to do the cruel and horrific things that they do, because we are the only people in the world that are free. A true free person is a person that doesn't do what his body tells him to do, doesn't do his lusts and desires and what his ability to do. I'm stronger than you, so I can take what you have. That's not a yid. That's an ovid. A yid is a person who is free because he serves HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yitzhak Hashem, learning the tshuvas of Oshri should be a wonderful aliyah for my holy mother's neshama. It should be a preparation for us for the 3 weeks. Yitzhak Hashem, if we understand fully the message, the monument that Rav Oshri created, and Yitzhak Hashem, this year, Tisha B'Av should be a famous and wonderful yontif for all time. Yizichor Baruch.